On the screen is the Hebrew Yahweh. Hebrew is a consonantal language, so there are no vowels. You can put them in, but it doesn't need them. That's the sacred name. It's a personal address for God, generally regarded as a verbal form derived from the root haya, which means to be or to cause to be. It goes back to the scene of the burning bush. I've observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I've heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I've come down to deliver them from the Egyptians. Exodus chapter 3. Moses was the one chosen to carry out God's will, and God assured him, I will be with you. And I've given you the Hebrew for that too. Eye. The Hebrew doesn't distinguish between the present and the future. You have to get the context. So you could say, I am with you, or I will be with you. Eye. Moses asks God, what's your name? You're sending me to Egypt. Are you the mountain God? Or, because of course he's polytheistic. So who are you? And God doesn't answer that question, because we can't name God comfortably, defining way. So he says the same word used up above there, I am who I am, or I will be who I will be. Both are good translations. You shall say to the Israelites, I am, or better, I think, I will be, has sent me to you. In other words, Moses, you can't name me, but trust me, I'll be there. Like Jesus at the Last Supper saying, I'll go ahead of you to Galilee and you'll meet me there. So this name, inverted commas, it's not a name really, but it's a word to speak about the promise, about a God who comes to release and redeem from slavery and bring to freedom. That's essential. What a beautiful idea of God that is. And it's, I will be, has sent me to you. And then the text goes on, and here it appears for the first time, Yahweh, that special form, I will be, is used everywhere, but Yahweh is only used of the God of the Exodus, the God of the burning bush, the redeeming God, has sent me to you. This is my, inverted commas, name forever. Whenever the psalmist writes, I'll say the word Yahweh, the scene of the burning bush is meant to come to mind. And so the image of a God who's determined to liberate us from slavery, indeed from anything that stops us, in Jesus' words, living to the full. In intimate communion with God and in a rich and truthful relationship with creation, especially the people who inhabit our lives. So how are we going to address and refer to God? I'm sorry, that's gone off the page and I don't know what to do with it. If I write in the book or in here or up there, G-O-D, simply, then that translates the Hebrew word in the Psalms, Elohim, which occurs 372 times in the Psalms. You'd expect that. So that's the ordinary word for God in Hebrew. It's a plural, probably because it's all-embracing. It's everything's kind of caught up in it. I hope this is okay. When I write God in the upper case, capital letters, that's, well, you know that behind it is the Hebrew word Yahweh. And that occurs 758 times in the Psalms. So twice as much as calling God God, which is obviously correct, is the word Yahweh. Now, when you read Yahweh, when you see G-O-D in capital letters in my rendition of it, then in a way we should always be thinking of the burning bush and the redemptive power of God. When Yahweh is written in the Hebrew text, they don't actually say Yahweh because of the sacred name. Shall not take the name of the Lord of Yahweh your God in vain. Well, just make sure they didn't take it in vain. They didn't take it. So they always used to say, they'd read Yahweh in the text, and of course in the footnote of the now written text it says, say Adonai, which is the ordinary Hebrew word for Lord. And the Greek for Adonai, Lord, is Kyrios, and the English is Lord. When God is being addressed in the Psalms, just for literary variety, it's up to you do what you want, but that's what I've done, I sometimes, instead of putting God in capitals, I put you in capitals, but you know it's God. You know it's Yahweh. Now, and this isn't going to get any more complicated, God, ordinary God with an asterisk, means that the Hebrew, because sometimes, not only do they say Adonai when they read Yahweh, but the text has Adonai in it. And that happens 38 times in 150 Psalms, so it's not very often, but it does happen. So when that happens, I'm going to use G-O-D with an asterisk, and gradually you'll get to know, oh, that means Lord or Adonai in Hebrew. Whatever translation we use for the Hebrew Yahweh, and I'm using God in capitals, the Bible usually uses Lord in capitals. I've actually tried good oil, I'm not sure, it's just what I've decided to do. Since we're talking about such a mysterious reality and beautiful reality as God, I'm using the word God all the way through, and only God, and there are no substitutes. So whenever translation we use, we should keep in mind that the word Yahweh points to the mystery of a God who's infinitely beyond all our human titles, but who nevertheless is intimately close to us. I've heard the cry of my people in Egypt, and I've come to liberate them. That's Yahweh. The word psalm comes from the Greek verb psalen, which means plucking a stringed instrument with the fingers. That's the meaning of the Greek psalen. Later, the word psalen, that's the verb, infinite of verb, it was used more generally for making music or singing. Even if you weren't using a harp, you might be using something else, a lyre or some other instrument. Though it's generally, well, psalterion in Greek is a harp. Psalmos refers to the actual plucking with the finger, and later to the song plucked with the finger. So either way, if you're going to have a psalm, and if you're going to have a psalm in Mass, unfortunately, because of our, I don't know what it is, I won't judge it, it becomes another reading. You've had a reading from the Old Testament, then you have a psalm, which is another reading. It's not meant to be reading. Then you have a second reading from the New Testament, and then you have a gospel. All of that's quite beautiful. But the psalm is not meant to be a reading. It's meant to be with song and words. But the idea is that your thoughts are actually staying with the first reading and enjoying it and letting it settle in here, not get another set of ideas. So here's a quote from the New Testament, from the Ephesians letter. Sing psalms, there's the word in Greek, psalmos, and hymns and spiritual canticles among yourselves, singing and making melody, psalein in Greek. Paul wrote in Greek, so that's where the Greek, to the Lord in your hearts. Jesus speaks of the book of Psalms in Luke chapter 20. David himself says in the book of Psalms, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand. Now David didn't, he may have written some of the Psalms. It's probably unlikely, but he was renowned as a musician kind of thing in the mythology or the folklore. Just as Solomon was renowned for being wise. He didn't end up too wise, but he was looked on as wise. So all the wisdom books of the Old Testament are not attributed to Solomon, but they're called like the Book of Proverbs of Solomon or the, you know, the Songs of Solomon. So they're all, he's the figure that they have in mind when they do that. All the Psalms are David. He's the front of your imagination when you listen to the Psalms. Now, Jesus calls that too. Again, in Luke 24, Jesus says, everything written about me in the law of Moses, the Torah, law is not a good translation of it. Way is a better one, the Torah, because the Torah, yes, it is about the way we need to respond to God. So you could say law. It's quite appropriate for that. But most of the Torah is not about the way we respond to God, but the way God acts in history. The way God is there, redeeming, freeing, etc. So the way might be a better translation. So that's the way of Moses. The prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled. Now, some of the Psalms are not so much prayers, that'll become obvious, but they're reflections, meditations, thoughts about God's action in creation and in history of the people of Israel and on the meaning of life or on the advantages of living in accordance with the covenant. But they're not actually addressed to God as a prayer is. We'll see that when we do them. Others celebrate the position of the king and Jerusalem in the temple in the life of the people. Well, they're celebratory hymns. But when they're sung, they're not actually praying to God. Most of the Psalms are prayers addressed to God, which found their way into or were composed for the liturgical prayer of the community of ancient Israel and Judah. The psalmist didn't know Jesus. Their image, sorry for the spelling of there, their image of God is sometimes very different from that of Jesus. Jesus didn't see God as a warlord who can be called on to destroy enemies. Jesus didn't see God as consumed with vengeance, as punishing or as controlling. I've attempted to leave out sentiments that Jesus couldn't have prayed so that we as Christians can continue the ancient tradition of adapting the Psalms in the light of new experience.